Welcome to Rattlecast number 43. We have an excellent show for you today. Before we begin, I should say Rattle is a publication of the Rattle Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit working to promote the practice of poetry. We've been in continuous publication since 1995, and we are unaffiliated with any other organization. If you enjoy poetry as much as we do, please click the like button and make sure you subscribe and share this with your friends, no matter where you're watching this. It's always a pleasure to do these live broadcasts, but I want to make sure that people get to see them. And so so please do share and click the like button and do all that stuff to tell the computer overlords that we exist and that you like us. I'm double checking to make sure that everything is working, because on if you're a watcher of the Poets Respond Live on Sunday mornings, it didn't go out on YouTube, and I have no idea why. So I'm making sure that it does now, but it is now. So we are all set. Now, today's poet's going to be John Philip Johnson. It's a pleasure to talk to him in just a little bit. He's an excellent poet. We've published a bunch of great poems by him. But first, for our warm-up poem, I thought I would announce that Ted Kooser's poem, A Town Somewhere, from Rattle number 65, is a winner of the Pushcart Prize this year. So congratulations to Ted Kooser. If you want to know what it looks like to get a Pushcart Prize winning letter, this is what you get. Bill Henderson, who runs the Pushcart Prize, is very old school, and he does everything over mail. And so you get these kind of things, and then you get a little waiver that asks for your note, and it says in Bill Henderson's scrawl there, A Town Somewhere, Ted Kooser. So I thought for the warm-up poem today, we would read Ted Kooser's poem, A Town Somewhere, and here it is. A Town Somewhere. I'd like to find it for you, but I can't. You might not like it anyway. It's quaint and pretty in an old, worn way, quite near to me at times. But then it's gone, impossible to find. I've been there always, but I haven't been, if you can understand. It's a town that I remember in sweet detail that was never. It would be simple to find someone to love, it's so open there. Whenever there's a fence around a stand of flowers, bachelor's buttons, there's a gate with a hook and eye latch that a finger can lift. And whenever you see shutters framing windows, they're decorations only, for they shut out nothing. Those windows are Windex cleaned too, sprayed and wiped with wads of inessential news. If you peer deep into the liquid shadows, careful to avoid stirring the surface, you might see a figure rising, as if to take a breath of what's beyond, looking out at you above a sill of potted violets. Was she the person you might love? She's gone. And even as I call up the town for you, I feel it darken. Sundown. A dog is in the distance barking and barking, as if aware that we'd been there, just passing through, leaving no more than a scent on the wind where no one was or seemed to be. And that was A Town Somewhere by Ted Kooser. That's going to appear in the Pushcart Prize anthology this fall. So congratulations to Ted. It's always a pleasure to have a Pushcart Prize poem. So there you go. Ted Kooser is A Town Somewhere. Now, today's poet, as I mentioned, is John Philip Johnson. And we've published a bunch of his poems over the years, including the Poets of Faith issue, most recently a poem called Book of Fly, which became the title poem of his newest collection. And he turns his poems into graphic poetry with comic book artists, which is really fascinating. So John Philip Johnson is a poet and writer, mostly doing science and fiction and fantasy. He has had work in many journals and magazines, both literary and genre. He has a master's degree in poetry and teaches college English. And he is also a Pushcart Prize winner. Congratulations, John. I was going to surprise you here, but you won a Pushcart Prize too.
You're kidding.
For the Book of Fly. Yeah, let me show this on screen.
I'm astonished.
Yeah, so I thought I'd keep it a secret. I only went to get the mail on Sunday and found this waiting here. Like somehow. Yeah, somehow. As if it's the universe knew that I should wait until you're going to be the guest to find that letter.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so...
Well, that's really Wow, that's a great honor. I'm really grateful for it. You know?
Yeah, well, it's a great poem, and I even remember when we read it. I think it was maybe a year ago or so. When you submitted it, we read it and we said, "Wow, that is such a unique poem." I mean, that is such a strange, interesting, and deep poem. It was great. So star on the submission if we think it might be some kind of prize winner, either the Neil Postman Award or the Pushcart Prize, and. So we nominated it and it won. So congratulations,
wow.
John Philip Johnson, for winning a Pushcart Prize. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. It's like I can take the summer off now.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you'll always be a really Pushcart Prize that's winner. Right. That's for sure.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm really, that's really amazing. Well, thanks for your support, Tim. Thanks for your help. You know, thanks. I think not all editors would want to publish this stuff because it's kind of, sometimes it's kind of out there, you know, it's kind of different sometimes.
Well, it's different than other poetry, which is what I just love about it. Do you want to start out people can have some idea of what we're talking about? Your two poems.
Should
we
do
published.
That one first?
Yeah. Do you want to do Book of Fly first? Yeah, sure. Do you want to do it in the comic book form or in the text form?
We can do it first. Hey, first, let me do a plug though for my friend Ted Cruz, who's actually my mentor. This is, I can't see it. I don't have a picture of the camera. Uh-huh. I can't see the camera, but is this showing
it
up?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
The poetry, Ted Kuser, the Poetry Home Repair Manual. I wrote poetry for decades, and I wrote reams and reams of poetry, and I kind of like this stuff. Once in a while I find one, I like it. They're kind of sweet, but I hardly got anything published until I read this in 2008, and after that, almost everything I sent out got published. You know, it's a magical book, and it's really, I mean, it's this philosophy of poetry too, which is that like the reader. You're not writing poetry to show off about how brilliant you are. You're doing it because you've got the reader is giving you 2 or 3 minutes of their time, and so you want to give them something worthy of those 2 or 3 minutes. You know, so that's the philosophy that underlies this. So yeah, Ted, wow, that's really yeah. So Ted Kuser's book helped me get published a lot.
Well, he says congratulations. I sent him an email today. This morning, letting him know that he won the Pushcart Prize, and I mentioned that you were the other winner, both being Nebraska poets, and he said that he remembers having you in a class and that you were great, and he wanted me to pass along his congratulations. So congratulations.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. I'll reach out to him. He didn't spoil it, though. He didn't like email me though.
Well, I told him. I told him that we were gonna.
We do correspondence.
Yeah, I told him. He might be watching now, but I told him that we'd be. You happened to be the guest today, and that we would let you know live to see your reaction, I guess. And so he wasn't going to spoil it, but maybe he's watching. So hi, Ted, if you're watching.
Hi, Ted, if you're watching. Yeah.
So do you want to read that poem, The Book of Fly? And do you want
to? Let me scroll down to it.
Do you want to read it in the comic book form, or do you want to read it in the text form?
Why don't we read it? Why don't we just show the comic?
Okay.
If you like the comic though is a little distracting. And the things I like about a couple of these is that there's a what the artist came up with is not at all what I would come up with, but it's still I think there's some really awesome art that these artists have put with this stuff. This is by the artist by a guy named J.M. Lewis or Justin Lewis, and he does wonderfully weird stuff, and so he turned this into kind of a science fiction noir movie from the 1950s. This is from Mike Allen. And Mike Allen, he kind of taught me how to have fun with poetry back about 2011. It was Mike Allen and he had a magazine called Mythic Delirium, and there's also a magazine called Goblin Fruit. Have you heard of either of those or
you know I
either of those hit your radar?
I heard about it only because in your note to this poem back last when we republished it, you mentioned Mike Allen. So I went back and looked, and yeah, there's cool stuff that you can still find online. Yeah.
Yeah, they really taught me how to have fun with poetry and how it didn't have to be like interview academic stuff. You just write what brought you joy, you know, So this is the Book of Fly, and do you want me to start reading and you'll stick the art up there? You want to try that?
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so it's in chapter and verse, so I'll just read the numbers, but it's 1:1. Feeding on the living is good, but feeding on the dead is better. 1:2. Nestle your offspring in the rancid. 1-3. The air is heavy. Let it work for you. But fly only until you find beauty. 1-4. Shit is beautiful. 1-5. Rub your hands together before you eat. 1-6. If you land on the wrist that holds the swatter, consider yourself lucky, not clever. 1-7. Remain humble if you think of anything. 1-8. You only have a few days. Stay simple. 1-9. 1-9. Greed when you are able. 2-1. And when you are licked by the frog's tongue or swallowed by a songbird, or felled in a cloud of nerve gas and lie twitching unconcerned, 2-2. Know that it is the honor of a fly. It is its purpose to die.
Yeah, and that was Book of Fly for Mike Allen by John Philip Johnson. So,
Pulitzer Prize winning poem. By...
yeah, Pushcart Prize winning poem.
Pushcart Prize, sorry.
Yeah. So how did that poem come to be? I just wanted to ask about that. Like, were you, like, that is like the Bible of fly. Where did you come up with it?
Because the flies can't have a long Bible. It's got to be pretty short.
It does, yeah. They don't have a long life.
They don't have a long life, and they don't have a long attention span. And, I went to a poetry, I flew out to Boston because I wanted to meet Mike Allen. Because I just love the work this guy was doing and the stuff he was publishing. He publishes and edits a ton of stuff. And he's a big influence in the genre world. And so I wanted to meet this guy and just kind of learn from him. Just see, you know, just convert, you know, talk to him and see what, you know. And so I went out to this convention called ReaderCon. It was in Boston. And he was giving a poetry workshop. And I was like just off the plane. I think I still have my suitcase with me. And I was listening to him talk, and he was talking about flipping perspectives. Teachers say that kind of stuff all the time, but when he said that, and he said, like, for example, flies, like, they should, you know, they know they're dying, and they're okay with it, you know, or something like that. And that just kind of puzzled over that line I really liked it. For a long time, it kind of buzzed in the back of my head, and I was out in the sun. I was laying out in the sun a couple summers ago, and I had my notebook with me as I usually do. And there was a bunch of flies around, and I just started to write it. And they were just little aphorisms. And I thought, you know, how can I unify this? How can I make coherence out of this? You know, by these aphorisms. And so I rearranged them to the kind of a thematic order, And there's just like lightning bolts, like, oh yeah, these are just like chapter and verse, of course. And then once I had that, then I had the title, you know. And then it's like, well, of course, the Book of Fly. What else would you call it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty nice, yeah. In the comic book version, I don't say shit is beautiful. I think I say dung is beautiful. I think. And the reason I did the edit is that I printed a lot of these. I sold school supplies for about 20 years. You know, curriculum materials and crayons and desks and chairs, things like that. And so I'm pretty familiar with curriculum material sales. And I want to sell these in the schools, because here's the idea, Tim. It's like most people don't like poetry, right? I mean, a few do, but I mean, most of the country, not too interested in poetry. And if you're a high school English teacher, you probably like poetry. I mean, that's one of the reasons you've studied English, is that because you like poetry. So you like poetry, but your students don't, right? So this comic book is a great bridge to help introduce them to poetry, to show them that poetry can be fun and enjoyable, like all the other art forms, you know, like movies, like paintings, like architecture, like, you know, clothing, all, I mean, all the other beautiful art forms you do, poetry can be enjoyable. So it's part of the mission to help spread joy in the world, to help, you know, is to kind of trick students into liking poetry, I guess you could say. So,
yeah, how did I wanted to talk to you about the way it came to be, because you have really like well-known comic book artists as the people who were doing the drawings for these two chapbooks. And there's two I should mention. Where did I put the other one?
I got it here.
It was just buried in the other one. But yeah, Stairs Appear in the Hole Outside of Town too.
I still got a few of those left.
Yeah, I have three copies myself, and it's really cool.
Nice, sweet.
Yeah, it's cool. And but how did you end up working with these really great graphic artists?
Well, so I was starting to do I mean, for one thing, I like poetry with a narrative line, and I like poetry with real nouns. I mean, to me, that's the only way to really anchor a poem. And to make it enjoyable for a reader, I don't want to give them much of abstract stuff. Excuse me. I don't give them much of abstract stuff it's confusing for them. I want real nouns, really palpable nouns. And so I was writing stuff like that with short narrative. It tended to have a narrative element in them anyway. And one day I was reading, one day I was online, and a friend of mine had posted some poetry illustration by Julian Peters. And it was a few pages of the love song of Jail for Proof Rock. He since illustrated the whole poem and has it available as a comic book. But I just saw just a few pages and I thought, this is fantastic. This is the real deal. I love this stuff. And so I wrote him a letter and I said, you know, I don't know if you'd be interested or not, but, you know, I'm thinking about maybe making a comic book of poetry. Would you be willing to illustrate my stuff? Here's a couple sample poems. And he wrote me back and, you know, I love your stuff. I'd love to do it. And he did Stairs Appear. That was the first one. And then he did There Have Come Soft Rains. And There Have Come Soft Rains has gotten republished a lot. It's in anthologies. It's in textbooks. It's really cool. Just a couple weeks ago, I got a check for $200, you know, for a poet, that's like big money, right? I mean, it's like, wow, that's like top of the line. So somebody's reprinting it. They sent me $200, you know? So that was how. So it was just, you know, Julian Peters, you know, I saw his stuff. I loved it. I thought my stuff would work well with poetry. I approached him. He said yes. And then I thought I should have other artists working on the book. So,
mm-hmm. Well, it's a great.
In fact, I think it might have been Ted actually who suggested that I contact Bob Hall. Uh-huh. Because he's a guy here in Lincoln also. He used to do a lot of work for DC and Marvel. And I mean, he was kind of a legend for those guys. He still makes his living going to comic cons and signing his name. Mm-hmm. You know, people paying to sign his name. Yeah, which is cool. And I showed him, and I said, "What do you think?" And because I didn't know, I mean, he's kind of a big shot in the comic book world. I said, he said, "Yeah, I like that. I'll do that." You know, so that was, and then once those two guys were on the project, then everybody else said yes, you know, because it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of a testament to meritocracy, kind of, because these poems really work well for this genre. Like, they're just so creative. The Stairs Appear poem, yeah. I just think of that. That's one of my favorite poems we've published. And they really actually are so creative. So the idea that some, you know, in the poetry world, it tends to be this, like, you know, what awards have you won? Now that you're a Pushcart Prize winner,
you can
get a bunch of doors open.
Wow,
I
suppose it will. It's really.
But really, I mean, you never published any books before, but just the quality of these poems and how imaginative they were sold it to the artist.
I've been writing for so many decades. You know, if you just pull off your best work of 30 years, you know, it's gonna be pretty good. Hopefully, you know. So.
Well, do you want to read another poem? I don't know what you wanted to go to next.
Sure. You want to do? It's a little different order, but you want to try Stairs of Beer?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
And they can, that way they can see Julian Peters' poetry. This was the first one I had illustrated. I remember he sent me the email, and I opened up the JPEGs, and I was breathless. I was just like, wow, these are so cool.
Yeah, I should say, if anybody loves these and wants to see them again, they're available on our website. And I think we have PDFs available. You can just download if you want, too.
If they want to get the whole comic book, I think it's $2 on my website, digital, or $5, mm-hmm. which is a real deal.
Yeah.
For the paper copy, which is the paper copy plus shipping, which is like $3. So you have to. I mean, to me, it's a comic book. So to me, it's you know, holding the paper in your hand and with a can of root beer nearby or something like that. That's the deal.
Yeah, totally. You know, Well, here you go. It's everybody like, can see it now. So go ahead.
Stairs appear in a hole outside of town. Stairs that never stop going down, concrete steps, concrete walls, down 12, turn right, down 12 more, fluorescent bulbs humming on every landing. You can look between metal railings and see down into the vanishing point. It's creepy because it's so bland, because it's so otherwise plausible. There are little clusters of tourists and townsfolk walking up and down, murmuring their speculations. The municipality has stationed a few policemen in the upper stories. After that, it's the wilderness of young men who aren't huffing or letting their better judgments hold them back. Some pack a lunch, see how far they can go. A few loners have gone for days or longer, obsessed, and come back with critical perspectives on prior stories brought up, arguing against them, bringing rumors of their own. Rumors of the lights shifting imperceptibly, of ambiguous odors, of vast ballrooms and wide open spaces, of small villages with picnic areas, of hot, steamy dioramas of hell, of strange animals, grotesque and sublime, of a rapture that some theorize is the bends, but they swear is as real as the bright, pounding light that fills everything down that deep, where the stairs are made of light, the walls aglow you can't quite touch. This is weeks down, beyond some rapture or rupture point, beyond some point from which they never really come all the way back.
And it was stairs appear in a hole outside of town. That was from our speculative poems issue. And it's just such a great speculative poem.
Thanks so much.
Where did the idea of that one come from? Just stairs. I mean, that is a cool, episode of Outer Limits or something.
That's exactly, yeah. And that's to me, that's kind of my aesthetic ideal is to do like the Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or something like that. This one, you know, I was in kind of this manic mood where it's like, I just felt kind of all powerful, you know, it's like, man, I got a poem in me, you know, it's like, I mean, Napoleon would be like, I'm gonna go conquer a country, but I'm like, I'm gonna go write a poem, you know, and I just knew I had something in me. I was just kind of waiting for that first line. I didn't know what the subject matter was going to be, right? And then it's like, boom, I got the subject and I wrote it out then. It actually took a lot of revision though. I think I had the first line, but the next three or four, five lines were really kind of muddy and dull, and I need them to be kind of snappy. And it took a lot of revision with Grace Bauer. Shout out to Grace Bauer, a teacher at UNL. She's just great. And Adam Hubrick and Chris DeMarco and Tully. I can't, this was a few years back, but and so yeah. So it was workshop in your standard academic, you know, workshop environment, and that's really what helped it really get really clean, I think, is that workshopping. So yeah, I mean, all of us, I mean, you know, none of us, you know, no man is an island. I mean, most of us, you know, we can't do it. I mean, we need a group to help us, you know, help kind of, I mean, ultimately you do it yourself, but without the group, without the context of society, it's not, you know,
yeah,
it's not really
well,
all that good.
Well, Nebraska is such a literary hub with, you know, Prairie Schooner and Kwame Dawes and Grace Bauer, who you mentioned. And, there's so many great poets coming out of Nebraska. I think it really rivals Iowa. Their workshop is one of the central places that poetry comes from.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Ted mentioned that you took a class with him. Did you? What is your background in poetry? Like, how did you come into poetry?
I was back when I was an undergraduate. I was an English major, and one day I was reading Byron. I was reading his Don Juan, and you know, I was enjoying it. And he rhymed gunnery with nunnery, and I thought, really? I mean, you would stoop that low, Lord Byron, you know? And I also thought, I thought anybody can do this. And I realized that it doesn't have to be like, you know, great human beings, but just regular folks can write poetry, you know. So it was kind of liberating for me. And I scribbled out reams and reams of poetry for a lot of decades, back in my 20s and 30s. And most of it's just lost. It's just in the, what do you call it, detritus or the flotsam. But once in a while I come across one, and they're kind of sweet. I enjoy seeing them. But so I wrote poetry for years and years and years, and then rarely got it published. But there was a great literary tradition around town. There was a guy named Bill Clefcorn who was I mean, Ted was kind of the unknown poet. We were all aware of his work, but none of us ever saw him hardly. But his friend Bill Clefcorn was a very sociable guy. He became the state poet, and he was a dear friend to probably 10,000 people. I mean, really, I kind of was a dear friend, and I'm one of 10,000 who did, you know. I really, so he was a big help. Hilda Raz, do you know her name?
Oh, yeah, of course.
She was editor of the Schooner before Kwame, mm-hmm. and she was a very powerful personality and a good poet. And well, there was a bunch of others. Roy Scheel was really good. The guy in Hastings, I'm sorry, Don Welch, and he was really good. And there was Susan Strayer Deal, she was super. Anyway, there was a lot of cool poetry back in the early 80s and 90s. And I would go to all the poetry readings, so I knew all those guys. And
yeah.
Except Ted. Ted was the, no one, none of us knew Ted.
Oh, really?
Ted got better, though. That's the funny thing. I mean, like, you look at Ted's early book of poetry, and it's pretty good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just one of many books that was published in 1968. But his later stuff gets so strong, and that's what's really amazing. And then his friend Bill Clefmore, who's his first book, I think it should be up there with like Giants on the Earth or something like that. It's called Alvin Turner's Farmer. I think it's just a great poetry book, and it was by far his first book is by far his best book. And I'm just kind of rambling now, I guess. But anyway, this is the environment we had in Nebraska. Yeah, I think still is a very literary environment.
Yeah,
it's a nice place. It's a nice place to be. It's not such a bad place to be, you know, mm-hmm. Nebraska. And I'm glad to be here. You know, there's a lot of jobs. There's not too much crime. It's pretty clean. You know, it's a real nurturing town, you know.
Yeah, well, I was there to interview Kwame in the issue that Book of Fly appears in. I didn't even make the connection that you were a Lincoln, Nebraska poet, too. Well, I should say, if anybody has any questions for John Philip Johnson, just leave them on the chat window or on Facebook, and pass them along. But do you want to read some more poems, John?
Yeah, I do. Let's read the next one. Let's read is let's read the Shadow Folk, and it's kind of a cool poem. There's a lot of cool images in it. I mean, it's jam packed with real nouns. So many real nouns. It's kind of like fantasy. The first line, by the way, is from Coleridge. Well, it's from the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, where he said, you know, there was a ship. I don't know if you remember that poem or not, but he's like, the old guy says, there was a ship. He's like, wait, what? What'd you say? He's like, you know, so that was the first line from that. But this, I mean, I think Bree Underhill did the art for this one. And Bree is an up-and-coming artist. She's out of Texas. She does really fantastic work. It has this kind of dreamy, kind of almost mythic quality. And when she picked this one to illustrate, I thought, well, this will be good. It's jam-packed with real nouns, and so she'll probably illustrate the nouns. But no, she does something significantly different than what's going on in the narrative, and yet it works. It ties together. And I think this is good. These aren't just illustrated poems. These are graphic poems, you know, and there's a tendency among maybe like the language poets who'd like maybe do like language illustrated language poetry where the illustration is like they hate narrative anyway, but the art involved would be sort of like another brushstroke of the, or the text would be kind of a brushstroke to go along with this little kind of odd picture. And that's the way they build it. I mean, that's fine, but there's nothing wrong with this. I think this graphic approach that we do, it creates a singular experience for the reader. It's kind of like the movie for the movie script. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's really a unique thing that we're doing here.
Yeah.
Hey, ask me about these blocks later. I'll tell you about these blocks. Some other unique thing.
Okay.
Are you ready to?
Yeah.
Me to read
go
it?
Ahead.
Slow.
Mm-hmm.
There was a castle, and creatures inside, who thought of themselves as human. During the day, they pretended they had bodies, and at night, they gasped for light in the flickering torches. The wind was heaped in piles like bread along their hedgerows. Time was a line of braying cattle, sluggish in the moonlight, halting, lowing like love as it settles in dust. The sunlight they had shoveled as yellow sludge against the ice was not enough that year. Winter was monstrous. The darkness fattened all the shadow folk or absorbed. For a while, the last ones leached off those still living, the way memories feed on the present moment, swelling to the size of green apples, dropping off with a cry. So I thought it was a pretty cool poem when I wrote it. I thought it got published in a nice joint, and I like kind of the mythic quality to it, and the kind of the jumble of kind of intense metaphors, you know. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
But then Bree's graphic treatment is just, I think it's just awesome. I mean, I just love that kind of dreamy distance that she's got in her art. So
you know what it reminds me of? I think we mentioned this maybe on the last episode, but I've always been a fan of Art Bell. Back from when I worked overnight shifts, and it just reminds me of reading the whole all of these two comic books remind me of those great Art Bell episodes, like the, what was it, the Mel's Hole, like he had a story you just throw things in and they never land.
I heard about that after I wrote the poem. Somebody told me. Yeah.
But all in the Shadow People, and there's just this like sense of like there's another world besides for this world, and it's sort of walking alongside of us, and that's what comes through in these imaginative poems. Believe, yeah.
Yeah, I'm. You want me to read a normal poem that's not too genre?
Yeah,
world?
Let's try a normal poem. That's a good contrast. Yeah, sure.
Okay, here's one. This is one of my first publications, and it's the first one on the list I gave you. The Second Glorious Mystery. And the Second Glorious Mystery, for those of you who aren't Catholic or those of you who are Catholic and forgotten, the Second Glorious Mystery is the mystery of the Rosary, and it's the ascension of Jesus into heaven. So the Second Glorious Mystery. Instead of rising into the sky, what if he had stayed, laid down on the ground, and said goodbye with an ineffable smile, dissolving into a puddle of something like water or a starless night sky, his smile disappearing until he was no more than a glint on the surface before sinking into the land. Then we would say of him, he is not a transcendent God. We would say of the tree, oh, there you are. We would drink in the perugia of afternoon sunlight and say to our friends, I love you like dirt, like ashes in the wind. I adore you as you are lost to the underside of things, to the pulse of quiet which answers the thrust of light.
Oh, and that was The Second Glorious Mystery by John Philip Johnson.
I don't know if I've got a rosary here.
Yeah.
With an arrange to show you. I've got, yeah.
You mentioned, being a Catholic poet. One of the things, and you were in our Poets of Faith issue, which is one of my favorite issues. With Chris Anderson was the interview. It was such a good issue. And I'm not a religious person, but I love religion. And I think it's just so valuable. Do you feel like poems are sort of prayers? That's the thing that I always feel like as a non-religious person, that's the way poetry operates, is that it's a kind of prayer to the mystery of the universe or something like that. Do you have a spiritual connection to poetry, do you think?
That's not a bad way to look at it. Yeah, they're certainly similar, poems and prayers, and I like that about it being a prayer to the mystery. I mean, there's something mysterious about a poem. I mean, it's, at least when I write, I'm trying to find beauty, beauty is a facet of God, so it is a worship in that sense. I'm hoping to find a bit of God, and God's all around us, but sometimes it's more obvious, and so I'm trying to find find something more obvious, I guess. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely part of my mission too. I mean, I think I'm doing what God wants me to do, so. You know, and as a Christian too, I mean, we believe that no good thing comes except from God. You know, so when I'm able to sort of write a poem, and then that kind of thing, when you kind of disappear into it as you're writing it, and you come at the end of it, and you're like, wow, that was, you know, that, and I always have to give glory to God, because I mean, that's, you know, the really good stuff you're writing over your head, you know, mm-hmm. it's just not stuff.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You and I are having lunch together or something like that. We're not going to be really over our head. And we might discover little stuff, but mostly it's going to be, it's gonna be small discoveries. Maybe it's probably not gonna be anything really cool. I mean, it'd be enjoyable, but it's not, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I you know, I remember when I was a teenager, I tried to sort of find God, and I joined a church and went, you know, to service and hung out with like the church kids there. And I never understood this idea that the Bible is sort of divinely written. And it wasn't until years later that I found poetry and realized that experience of like, it's like something else is writing you. Like, you're the instrument of something else when you're doing that act of creation. And it really fits as if that's like you're a vessel of God or something.
Well, I think we did discover something here. Yeah, actually, this is I think we didn't go someplace pretty good there. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think that's how I see life. Yeah.
Well, do you want to read some more?
How much more time do we
have? 20 minutes.
Oh, that's great. Let's read. Do you want to read? Should we do it after the? Oh, was this one?
Yeah, whatever you want to read. I have a whole bunch of stuff here.
Let's. I kind of read something kind of sweet. Let's read after the changeling incantation, which is in the comic book. Okay. And this is one that was published. I wrote it. It's one of those things. After you write a good poem, you're like, wow, that's you can usually just tell, you know. And I wrote it. And I thought, I really like this poem. And I thought there's one magazine that should be in. It should be in Strange Horizons. And I sent it. I didn't send it anywhere else. I sent it to them, and they took it. Rami took it. Do you know Strange Horizons?
Oh, I do. Yeah, it's one of the. It's actually, I think, one of the first places I published my own stuff. I have some. I don't even remember if it was poem or a. I don't know if it's a poem or a short story, but I published something there back in the day. Yeah, back when I was publishing.
Well, I think Strange Horizons. I mean, if your readers want to get an introduction to genre poetry, which is science fiction, fantasy, horror. I mean, it's genre work. Now, I think Strange Horizons is one of the best places they could go.
Yeah.
To see some of the best, the best quality versions of it.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. I totally agree. The other thing is the Science Fiction Poetry Association is really good too, which I think Book of Fly was nominated for whatever they call their award.
Just a couple of days ago it was.
Yeah. So how they work is you get nominations, they make an anthology of all the nominations. They send all their members a copy of the anthology, and then they vote on the winner. So we won't know if Book of Fly won for a long time, but I think that's how it works, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. You aren't a member, are you?
No, I'm not, no.
And they just nominated the comic book for they have a award for books and just they just nominated the comic book.
Oh, that's cool too.
Some discerning reader did.
So what were you gonna read again, and where is it? I'm trying to find. Oh, if the changeling. It's from Stairs Appear. The one thing that's frustrating about your comic, there's no table of contents.
I kind of wondered about that when I was doing it, but I thought, I don't know, it takes up space.
It does, yeah. I mean, it makes no sense, you know, because you read it through, but.
Just dive in and read it.
Exactly. Yeah, take 15, but for me, minutes. Trying to find the poems, it's going to take a little while.
It's the one.
It's in Stairs Appear.
It's in the green one. It's in Stairs Appears, and it's one that looks like this.
Okay.
In fact, I can almost hold it up like that.
Okay, I found it.
It's getting dark right here. Do I need to turn any lights on, or is that?
Oh, you're good. Yeah, the cameras adjust.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Okay, so I'm ready to become after the changeling incantation.
Yeah. Mike Lawler illustrated this. I think he's a Utah artist, fine artist. He sells lots of like regular gallery art. But back in college, he and I did a comic strip called Leisure Man, about an unemployed philosopher who walked around in his brown terry cloth robe complaining about life in America, which sounds like some of the college guys who
it
did.
It does, yeah.
So Mike Lawler, yeah. So after the changeling incantation, to become a goose had seemed important earlier when he made the change. A gray goose, for some reason, fat, with the ability to lift above the archer's arrows. fly past the leafless autumn trees and cross the bowl of the mountain valley beyond those far peaks. There was a mission to get something or to return with someone. Some reason to be a goose other than just gooseness, other than filling your wings with sky. Hands drop the wand. Feathers cannot pick it up. We forget when we change, we become something else. Things mean differently. He circled the great alpine woods, forgetting. There, below, knotted in the trees, were the plottings of men, creatures like little gods, with their endless violence upon things. They make such noise. They wail and bleed. It is no place for a goose. It is no place for one who can find north and south within his body and know which one to choose.
Yeah, there's another poem from Stairs Appear in a Hole Outside of Town, John Philip Johnson's first graphic poetry book. Do you want to talk a little bit about the way you publish these? Because that's unusual too, and might be something that people should know about. Because you kickstart these books.
Oh, I figured. You know, if you could find a publisher to do this, they'd probably only want to do like a couple hundred copies, maybe, and then they wouldn't hardly give you any money. So I thought, if I actually want to do this, I should do it myself. And so, I did a Kickstarter and raised a few thousand bucks, and then. It wasn't enough to cover all of it, but it was enough to get a big chunk of them printed. And then I ordered a bunch, and then I sold them. The first one I sold at I would go to conventions and science fiction conventions. I sold a lot online and stuff like that. And what I want to do this time is I want to sell it to schools. I mentioned that earlier about the, you know, trying to trick students into liking it, because I have lesson plans, and I've actually got a package for the teachers. So I think I can sell a lot to the schools. Bob Hall, the guy that worked for Marvel and DC and Image and Dark Horse and all those guys, he said if you can sell a couple thousand copies, then on your own, then he says then, which I think we can do. I don't know, maybe not, but he said, but then one of the a publisher like Dark Horse or Image, who are like number 3 and 4 in the comic book world after DC and Marvel. He said one of those guys is likely to pick it up, because I think if a flat-out amateur can sell a couple of thousand copies, what about a bunch of Sharpies like us? I mean, we can sell 10 or 20,000 or whatever. So he said that's the way to do it. So hopefully we'll see what God has in mind, but that's the thing I'm aiming for. Mm-hmm.
And did you find, what was your experience like, though, kickstarting? And how that works for people who don't know is that you post and say, if we reach these levels, then we'll be able to publish the book. So you have to donate in order to sort of make the book happen. So everybody who donates is sort of a participant in the production of the book.
Absolutely. And their names are on the book too. Their names are on the inside covers. And then and people who said nice things about the book, reviewers or editors or whatever, I put their blurbs on the back. And they're all real blurbs. They're not like fake blurbs. You know what I mean? Like, the industry's ripe with fake blurbs. These are real blurbs. Most of them are unsolicited. I think maybe almost all of them are unsolicited, I think, the blurbs. And if somebody wants to know how to do Kickstarters, there's a ton of how to do a Kickstarter, and that's what I just did. I just read a bunch of those online. And but I was kind of lucky. For the first book, you were publishing one of them when the Kickstarter was going on, and then Ted was publishing one in his newspaper column. And so I had a couple boosts, and then the other thing, you just tell everybody you know. Mm-hmm. And you try and tell them like one-on-one. So, I mean, you know, you're trying to do just a cut and paste. You try and sort of approach each person you know. And you do it ahead of time. I mean, you prepare ahead of time and all that stuff. And, you try to make a short video, and it sort of does the pitch. Really. I mean, I had to hone the pitch to like a minute and a half, you know, down from like 10 minutes, you know. And so, just stuff like that. I mean, just it all just came together. The first one, the second one came together pretty good too. The second one was harder. I was at a wedding out in California, right when I was starting it. So it didn't quite do as well. We still raised a bunch of money, though. Still got a good response for it. So, and if I'd done everything I'd done the first time, I think we would have hit 3,000 or 4,000. But we still do okay, though. So,
have you found that you mentioned going to comic conferences and things like that? Do you find that comic book fans appreciate it? Like, did they enjoy it for the come for the comic book and then find the poetry?
Stay for the poetry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The response from my comic book has been very strong. I think it's I've had a lot of them tell me it's the best or one of the best independent comics they've seen or seen in years or So yeah, the response has been very strong among those guys. The trick is just getting into their hands. I mean, there's a billion people in the world trying to get attention on the internet or whatever, and I guess I'm just one more. And I find it kind of tedious to be one more of them. But anyway, that's what I got to do if I'm going to sell these things. Is just get the word out there. It's work. It's work, Tim. I'm a poetry salesman now. And so it's like it's almost going door to door. I find the conferences. I mean, they're fun, but you spend all weekend to sell 30 comics, 40 comics. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, you do it for love of the game. It's not for the money,
Yeah. Well.
But still, I mean, but yeah, they like it.
Well, since we keep talking about Ted Kooser, though, it's a perfect example. Because the story he tells in our interview with Ted, which I don't remember what issue that was, 32.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Something like that.
Was that Alan? Was that when Alan?
Yeah,
Alan,
yeah.
It was Alan.
Yeah. But he tells a story about how Delights and Shadows, which won the Pulitzer and ended up making him Poet Laureate of the United States. He was at a conference. I don't know if it was the New York Book Festival, maybe, but
something like that.
Some buyer for Barnes & Noble happened to pick up his book, the one book she happened to grab as she was walking past, and she read it and loved it and decided to, make it a featured Barnes & Noble book. And that's what made it take off. It was just the luck of being there. And then and he went from being a poet like any other poet who's a good poet but doesn't take off like that into being a Ted Kooser who's
super
poet laureate.
Famous.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was. I mean, because really, I mean, my opinion of Kooser was that he was definitely a peer with Clefborn and Greg Kuzma and Hilda Raz and all. I mean, I thought he was one of many good poets, but I didn't think he was head and shoulders better than they were. I mean, maybe he is now. It's hard to perceive it, though. I mean, because he's so famous now, it's hard to look at his stuff just as just Ted's poems. It's without looking at sort of all the awards people have given to him, mm-hmm. But I think there's tens of thousands of poets out there who write really good stuff, and I mean, like movie actors. I mean, there's tens of thousands of people that could win the Oscar. They aren't in Hollywood or they aren't acting or whatever. Mm-hmm.
There's just so much talking about. The other famous story I just say is Bruce Cohen tells a story, and so somebody submitted a book, a story to a Michigan Quarterly Review. It was rejected, mm-hmm. and then they forgot that they'd already had it rejected there. Sent it again, and it was published. And then they loved it so much the second time they read it after they rejected it that nominated it for a Pushcart Prize. Speaking of Pushcart Prizes, it all ties together. And then an agent read it in the Pushcart Prize anthology and said, hey, do you have a book? Because I love this short story. And he did. And the book was She's Come Undone by Wally Lamb, which ended up as an Oprah Winfrey Prize winner.
Oh, my gosh.
Only because he accidentally sent it to the same magazine twice because he forgot it had already been rejected there. That is the story that Bruce Cohen tells in one of the essays that we published at some point. But
that's a great story.
That is just the luck that's involved, though. We live in the golden age of writing and poetry, and there's just no limit to what you can find. It's just amazing to see. And so some people get lucky, and part of luck is, of course, how many times you roll the dice and never giving up rolling the dice. But
How long you persevered at your craft or whatever. But yeah, but there's tens of thousands of good poets in America that'll never see the light of day hardly.
Yeah, there really are. And but it's so cool that you have these comic books, and I hope they take off because it's really a way to introduce poetry to people, I think.
That's what I hope to do, and I hope to. I'm hoping Julian, he's got his T.S. Eliot comic. I'm hoping that he'll let me publish it, and then we can use that as the and we can sell that one too. Hey, I want to show you these little blocks here. I don't know if you can recognize them in the dark, but they're mm-hmm. wooden. They're 1-inch wooden blocks. Can you see
yeah,
them?
We can see them.
Okay, and so what I'm going to do, this was Brian Tawara's idea. He's the president. He's a Laotian poet. He's a Laotian American poet. He's the president of SFPA. Anyway, he said, those infinity folding deals, those picture cubes were like, you can unfold them and they keep getting bigger. You know that you've had those in your hands before and mm-hmm. play around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said, what if we design some poems on those? I said, oh, that's a great idea. I really like that. So talk about a product, or I mean, let's talk about a, this is not a project that sort of ends up, you know, making you rich or famous, but it's a beautiful idea. I just love the idea. So we're going to do that. And I'm working on some text. And I'm going to use some illustrations, and I think I'll put a rocket ship on it someplace. And I've already got kind of some of the text, but the thing is, like, it's got to work so that as you open it up, the text keeps working all the different ways you open it. And that's kind of the trick of it, I think. You can't just slap some poem on there. You got to make it work on it. It's got to be part of the cube. And so, this is one of the projects yours truly is up to right now, you know? I mean, there's no magazine you can send it to, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of a dead end, commercially, or as far as advancing your personality, I think it's really a beautiful thing to do. So, you know, we're gonna try that, me and Brian, and see how that turns out. I'll send you a picture if it turns out good, or I'll send you a video of it.
Yeah, you know? Or send me a sample. We can show it on a future Rattlecast. It reminds me of Taylor Molly has those poetry dice. Have you seen those? Or
no.
Metaphor dice, I should say. And it's a different kind of concept, but he takes like three objects. And you roll the dice, and you make a metaphor out of them somehow.
Kind of like haiku dice.
Yeah. Well,
like
it's for metaphor. It's for making your brain sort of think on that level of comparing one thing to another, and everything existing on a different plane of parallel existence or whatever.
That sounds really cool. I've never met Taylor, but we've corresponded a couple times, and I really like his work. I think he's a really cool guy. So.
Yeah. Well, he's gonna be on this for anybody who cares in I think September 22nd. So we're booked way out until then, but we'll have Taylor. He was going to come to the Wrightwood Literary Festival, but it was canceled this year because of the coronavirus.
Sadly.
But we're going to have him on the Rattlecast instead, and then have him in 2021 when we have a bigger blowout Rattle or Wrightwood Literary Festival.
Bigger and better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, combine a couple years into one.
I'm really excited that a friend of mine, he's done 99% of the work, Tom Lombard. He's made a short motion comics video of one of my poems, and he's gonna do. He wants to do the whole Stairs Appear. He wants to do all five of them eventually,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll post them on Amazon. But we submitted to at least one film festival, which got canceled, but we were accepted for it. So hopefully we can get in and win. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, I've seen the finished version. It's really nice. It's the Bones and Shadows poem.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I really like that poem and. Anyway, so that we've got a video of that. So after halfway, hopefully we can win some prizes and cop a little fame with that.
That'd be nice. Well, all your stuff is so cinematic, but like shorts, you know, like cinematic shorts are kind of the poetry version of that is almost what you work in.
That's exactly it. You know, I mean, that's my favorite. That's my favorite medium when I'm watching movies is those short anthologies. You know, those short and with the short a bunch of short stories put together, and that's I'm very aware of. Poetry as a cinematic thing. I mean, I'm very much aware of that, and I like that. Do you want to read? You want me to read? This one can. It's The Stars My Destination. You want me to read that one?
Yeah, sure. Why don't we do two poems to finish this out because we're about running up out of time.
Okay, let's do Stairs Appear, and then after that, let's do Martian Gardens.
Okay, you mean The Stars My Destination.
Or, let's do The Stars My Destination.
Okay. In Stairs Appear. Gotcha.
In Stairs Appear. That's it. Yeah. And this was published, comics and all, in Strange Horizons. And, that was a talk about a coincidence. Yeah. I was sending out letters to people saying, you know, please support my Kickstarter. And, I got the one back from the editor, and she said, "Hey, this is pretty cool. This is kind of maybe you got any of these comics that aren't published yet?" I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I've got two, and those are the two. Those are these last two. The Stairs Appear, The Stars of My Destination, illustrated by this cool British dude named Adam Martin, and he does it. true kind of modern comic style. It's kind of got that awesomeness. I mean, if you look at, there's a, you know, modern comic books, I don't know if you've seen any, but you probably have, but there's kind of, they go for awesomeness in their illustrations. And that worked really well with this poem. This one kind of scared me to write it. I mean, I think poetry is all about voice. And even though, yeah, it's somebody else's voice, it's not yours, you sitting there, but still though, you inhabit the voice while you're writing it, you know, and at least I do anyway. And so it kind of scared me. I mean, it's kind of like Amy Clampett said about Marlon Brando. She said, not all the blood is ketchup. I mean, you know,
that's a good line.
I know that. See, I really like her poetry too, but, anyway, this is so you ready with the stars, my destination. It's based kind of on Zizek, and most of your readers and most of your listeners will know who Zizek is. He's that entertaining philosopher from, I don't know, Croatia or Serbia, wherever he's from. And it's also the stars, my destination is the title of a book by Alfred Bester. And he's really, for people who haven't read science fiction, he's one of the gems. He's one of the rewards you get for getting into science fiction is his novel, the Stars, My Destination. So this is kind of a conflation of Zizek and Bester. I scuttle in the dark down barely lit galleys, a sliver of life amongst hulks of the discarded craft. Salvage, they call it, but no one comes for it. We are alone. Floating in space, the wreckage of old spaceships and myself. The creak of old hulls is the void trying to break in, the relentless crush of nothing. We resemble the end of all things. The apocalypse does not recycle. The end of light, its dull terminus, the passing of the stelliferous era, it does not kindle new light, yet there is no end to endings. For now, excuse me. For now, we are the only place free from any nature, even our own. Garbage exists outside of time, beyond history, unencumbered in the near perfect dark. I am an egg. I am the egg of eggs, formless and empty, able to take any shape I want or none at all. I am the only thing without inertia. I want nothing. If I am born, it will be without meaning, like a star.
Hmm. That was another one. That was, let me show it to you.
Hey, it's my joy, man. This is it. I mean, how can I write academic stuff when I can write stuff like this? I mean, I just love this stuff.
The Star is My Destination by John Philip Johnson. Art and lettering by Adam Martin. And it reminds me of the William S. Burroughs. What is that one? The one with the control needs time and all that stuff. What is that? The stupid, ugly, bloated American. What is that? You guys got to look it up. Yeah. If you haven't seen this, what is it called? It is the God turning to Earth. I can't remember what the name of it, but I looked that up. But that reminds me of that. There's a great video of it. But these are just so cool and imaginative and definitely not academic, I guess you could say.
No, and I mean, really, I'm to the point now, like, I'm old enough, I've written poetry long enough. When I write a good poem, I think to myself, I'm the only person on the planet who could have written that. You know, it's just really satisfying.
That is the cool thing about poetry, that it's just so unique.
Stuff my wife I show stuff to my wife, my daughters, and I'm kind of like, and sometimes I don't even send it out anymore, but it's just, I write it, I just love it. And it's like, I'm the only guy that ever written that.
Well, the joy comes through for sure. Like the amount of fun you have with these, you feel them reading.
Thanks.
Do you want to finish out with one last poem?
Mm-hmm. Martian Garden.
Okay, Martian Garden.
It's the last poem in Book of Fly. Okay. With thanks to Mark Aiello, I'm not sure if that's how you say his name or not. I was reading in Nimrod, a poem. This is also one of those things where I felt like I had a poem in me that was going to come out, but I didn't know what it was about yet. And I was reading a copy of Nimrod, and Mark Aiello had a, I apologize for I'm pronouncing his name wrong, had a poem in there. And it was about, the subject matter was a little bit similar. I mean, that he had somebody inside the house painting a picture and somebody outside the house gardening. And I thought, wow, I could put that in space and I could make, you know, a bunch of changes. I mean, it's got none of the same words. It's got none of the same, the themes are different, but I did get the kind of the basic idea of somebody inside the house painting and somebody out in the garden from him. So I want to give him credit. It was the first garden we'd had there, the soil of pulverized minerals, more like mulch machine parts than proper dirt, but it held root and got clammy with moisture. We worked it all day, and then you stayed up painting it on canvas, as though you were in the caves at Avignon, capturing elk and bison. You lodged a big earth sun overhead, all bright and yellow, and rows of imaginary corn, yellow stalks and yellow silk, all of it yellow and beaming, with one gardener among them, me, I think it was, a yellow me, also beaming, as though the machine-made Martian air didn't bite on my lungs with each breath. Your painting changed things. And while the plants we have will hardly be green or even grow, and the sun will never be pulled closer, no matter how much pigment you apply. Still, as we work the next day, strewing our gray spores over the rocks, I was in your yellow Mars.
That is awesome. That was a Martian Garden by John Philip Johnson.
From the comic book, the Book of Fly.
Yeah.
And now all you guys are now all you all are in my yellow Mars. You know, it's just a beautiful meta way to. In fact, my wife painted a picture. If you go ahead about two more pages, if you got time, go ahead about two more pages on that. And there's a picture of her. She did this picture she did a picture of the poem. My wife's a painter. She makes a living as a painter.
Oh yeah. The sun, the yellow sun on Mars?
Yeah, she's got two. She's got one with the kind of the sunflowers, and she's got one it was just a really yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's the figure there, and here's the sunflowers one.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, so that's the yellow one, and then the sunflowers mm-hmm. one. Yeah.
Yeah, Sue Coma Johnson. There you go.
Yeah, speaking of Ted, when I wrote a good poem, I used to send them to Ted. I don't do that anymore, but I used to send them to Ted. It's like, hey, what do you think? You know, trying a little praise, you know. And he liked it. He said, he goes, send it to Poetry Magazine.
Yeah.
He goes, it does a lot more than most genre poems do. So I sent it to Poetry Magazine, but, you know, they didn't buy it. But I don't know, maybe someday. Hey, now that I'm a Pushcart Prize winner, maybe.
Well, seriously, I'm winner of the Pushcart Prize, and then they'll pay attention. And at every, the way it works really mostly is that every publication has like screeners, and they'll kick it up if they see something like that. So there you go.
Wow. Well, I used to read The Slush for Kwame over at the Prairie Schooner. Yeah, and yes, I used to read, and then Hilda had a deal. Like, yeah, if somebody had been published in half a dozen publications, and if they'd been in there, they were golden, and they were bumped up right away. So
yeah, it's a sort of a hierarchy going. It's really the way literary publishing works these days. But if there's any book that deserves a Pulitzer Prize, I just love these two comic books of yours, John. Thanks so much for
Tim. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to finally meet you after all these years. We've been published for about 10 years, and it's good to put a face to the name and all these awesome poems.
Well, likewise, you're a real pleasant person. You're really a congenial guy. I've enjoyed our time together, and I just love Rattle. It's my favorite poetry publication because I love your mission. I mean, it's about taking poetry to the regular person, you know, and. I love what Rattle does. You know?
Awesome. Well, thanks, John. It's great talking to you. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, you too, Tim. Bye. Thanks again.
guess that was John Philip Johnson reading from his two books of graphic poetry. We have The Book of Fly and Other Poems, 48 Big Pages. And you can find these at his website, which is John Philip Johnson with one L, Philip, johnphilipjohnson.com. But we have The Book of Fly, which just came out after being kickstarted over the summer. And a couple years ago, we have a whole Stairs Up Here and a Hole Outside of Town, which shows up a little better on screen because it's not glossy. But they're both beautiful chapbooks. So and they're cheap, too. So grab them and give them as gifts. And I think they're a style of poetry that a lot of people can enjoy. So I hope you do that. Thanks so much for joining us, John Philip Johnson. And congratulations on your Pushcart Prize. You know, it's a thrill for John, but it's a thrill for us, too, because we don't get those every year. And two is a rarity. So that's really fun for us. Now, we have the open lines. And let me put this up on screen really quick. So if you'd like to call in to read your poem, you can just send me a chat message to Rattle Poetry, all one word, if you'd like to read your poem. Or call 818-850-7727. And just let it ring a few times. It'll come up my call list, then I'll call you back when the time is right. Let's see. So Matthew King's raising his hand to read. We have a few people sending me, let's see, for the open mic. Brent Staffer. I'm accepting a request right now. Angela Gartner. So, yeah, email the poem if you'd like it to show appear on screen to open mic. That's M-I-C, open mic, all one word, at rattle.com. And I can show it on screen as you read. Dick Westheimer, Caitlin B., Caitlin Buxton, would like to read too. So we have a whole bunch of people lined up to read. And if you would like to too, just give me a quick call or a quick chat message. I'll read a few too if we have time. Now the prompt for this week was, let me see. There you go. It was write a poem that begins and ends with a question. Not the same question, two different questions. So my poem for this week was, as I'm working, I always watch lectures. I love just, YouTube is amazing, and there's so much cool stuff. So I was watching a lecture on the Sea Peoples and the end of the Bronze Age, which apparently no one really knows the exact reason why, and no one knows where these Sea People came from, but these Sea People started invading the Egyptian and Syrian empires in around, what was it, 1870 or so BC. And no one knows what these Sea People were. And they found recently a wreck of a ship, which included a whole bunch of personal items and tools and things like that, which would imply that they're not like Vikings raiding just for pillaging, but they're actually people trying to find a new homeland. And so no one even knows who these people were, and no one knows what they were fleeing from. And so the lecture I was watching was about just ideas for what they were fleeing. I guess there was a drought going on then, which could have driven them. There were a bunch of earthquakes at the time. So something drove them away from where they came from. And it was the collapse of their civilization, apparently, that led to the collapse of the entire Bronze Age world, where all the cities in Eastern Mediterranean fell, and most of them were never rebuilt after this little period of about 50 years where the Sea Peoples were coming. And here's my little poem. It's a triolet. Triolet for these days. It sort of reminds me of the days we're in a little bit. And a triolet, if you don't know, is that there's these, you'll see the rhyme scheme and the refrains. There's two refrains in the poem. But since the poem began and ended with a question, I thought this would work. So this is triolet for these days. Who were the Sea Peoples? What griefs were they fleeing? What blight brought their evils? Who were the Sea Peoples? Piled with pots, kids, and needles, the shipwrecks revealing. But who were the Sea Peoples? And what griefs were they fleeing? There's a quick triolet from me. Now, Megan, this is Megan's poem coming up, and these are her prompts. And she said she didn't like this poem, but this is, I don't think Megan can write a bad poem. So this is Megan's poem for her prompt, two questions. And this is today's news. Here's Megan's poem. Today's news. What if you saw her face in person, this brown-eyed girl on the screen with a wan expression and the wrists so thin they make your own ache to look at them? What if she walked beside you and played with your daughter and had a name? Could you still do this, go on with your day, walk to the post office, turn the key in your box, ready to read only what was meant for you? That is Megan's poem, Today's News. So those are our two, so that we participate too. Now let's see what you came up with. Let me see. So I have a bunch of people who've called in. Let's go to, Jessica Dawson, Vicky Miko, Angela Gartner. Let's see. Let's have people read them themselves first. Let's see. I said we'd do Caitlin. She hasn't been on in a little while. Let's call up Caitlin.
Ah.
Hey,
there Caitlin. We go. Yeah. I tried to pause my YouTube stream like right when you were calling, but as soon as the Skype window pops up, the shortcuts don't work. So, yeah.
Well, it works. You sound good and your video's good. Right. You got a great internet connection. So everything is good. How you doing tonight? And you're calling from Alaska, of course. How's everything going there?
Yep. It's good. Went out for a nice little nature walk today, and that's why I almost forgot this was happening. So thank goodness for YouTube notifications.
Well, I'm glad you got back.
And I have to say, I am not a huge graphic novel fan. Like, I've tried to read them with my students and on my own, and I enjoy the stories, but I find myself always thinking, oh, I just want to read the text. But this was really cool.
Yeah.
This interview tonight, and I also ordered his his books.
That's
in
so
digital
cool. I'm glad
format.
To hear it. Yeah, I feel the same way about graphic novels. I can't stand them, honestly. And my daughter, who's 9, she's about to turn 10. She loves all those. All those kid graphic novels, and she loves reading too. But I feel like they just kind of suck your imagination away a little bit. Because you can't imagine, you don't have that like third eye going on because you're just your two eyes seeing what's happening.
And it's funny too because I am actually really into movies and have been experimenting with some screenwriting. But I guess when I sit down to read a book, I just want to read a book. You know, I think maybe that's what it is it's just like the in-between state of the graphic
like you
novel
can't get,
that throws
get
me
lost
off.
In it. And I worry that like the ability to appreciate getting lost in something is lost if you're reading graphic novels. But these are...
I think John's right, though, that it's a good intro for kids who are poetry averse.
Mm-hmm. And these are so well done. Like, they're just such good poems. Like, every line is a good line, and then you have cool art to go with it. So I think it works really well.
For sure.
Yeah. So your poem is Ghost of the Self.
Yeah, I think I'm probably not the only one during this time who has felt like or seen myself kind of returning to old habits as I'm spending more time at home. And so that's kind of the headspace I was in when I attempted to write a poem on the prompt.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing it. Here it is. It's on screen. Let's see. I have to find it first. Screen view. There are just so many buttons. Okay. Okay, ghost. Yep. Ghost of the self.
All right. Ghost of the self. If you can see me, does that mean we've traded places, become our past self again? If you could see me shudder, I would, to know we've placed ourselves in the position of repeating the past. But if you can read this, who is writing whom into the present?
Very nice. That was Ghost of the Self by Caitlin Buxbaum. Thanks so much for sharing that, Caitlin, and joining us again tonight.
Yeah, if I could share one thing real quick.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This weekend, this Saturday, I'm actually having my first virtual book launch for my new book.
Oh, cool.
So if people want to tune into that, that would be cool. I'd love to see Rattle Regulars
put a
there.
Put a link in the comments wherever you're watching and so people can find you. And what's the book called? I saw it for a second, but not enough to read it.
Yeah, I just like look at it. Now you can't see it. It's called Interstitials, and it's actually already available because I was supposed to have a signing at a bookstore in April, and then COVID happened and it got canceled, and so it's already available, but I wanted to have a launch to read some from it and answer questions and talk with people. So
terrific. Yeah, well, include the link, and congratulations on your book. Yeah, it's great to hear.
Thanks. I will do that.
Okay, well, have a good night, Caitlin.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, I'm gonna read a poem for somebody, and then we'll get some more phone calls. Now this poem is by Anonymous. The author did not want to reveal her name, but I'm gonna read it in her stead. But this is Rat Eulogy from Anonymous. Why is it that rats get such a bad rap? As if they're gross and only full of germs, worthy of being poisoned in a trap. Mere mention of them can make people squirm, as if they are a cockroach or disease, incapable of bringing happiness, the way dogs and cats do with so much ease. But this sonnet will turn to sappiness, as I think of my rat and the oldest son, curled up near one another, then asleep, the worries of an Asperger's day done. A bond that can make this mother heart weep. Our silver snuggles did us so much good. Why are pet ratios misunderstood? That is Rat Eulogy by Anonymous. Thanks so much for sharing that. I love sonnets. It was great to get to read that. So thanks for sharing that, Anonymous. Okay. Let's see. So now that it's getting into summer, I used to know it was sort of time to stop when the sun started going down, and now the sun is still up, and so it's messing me up. But it is 7:30, so we gotta sort of wrap it up. But let's do Richard Westheimer, who because he was on the list for Poet Respond Live on Sunday, and we didn't get to him. So let's get to him before we go home tonight. Yeah, we got a lot of people on the list, but here's Richard Westheimer. Thanks so much for joining us. Let me pull you in, Richard. Hello, how are you doing tonight?
Good. It's a little warm here in Southwest Ohio, but I've got the fan turned off. Had to hit the YouTube stop and the fan on.
Awesome. Well, it sounds great, so I appreciate that you did that. It's hot in here, too. My office, we don't get any air conditioning or heat. So in the winter, I'm like bundled up, and I'm going to be sweating every one of these podcasts because I can't have fans in the windows open. So I'm in trouble, but we'll see how it goes. I need to come up with something.
I was thinking the same thing today.
Yeah. So you had, let's see, your two-question poem implicating you in the crime of the last half eon. Is there anything you want to say about it before you read it?
Well, I thought I was going to be very clever and just do one question that lasted the whole poem that would have sort of qualified as being at the beginning and end, but the poem demanded otherwise. So here you are, me implicating you in the crime of the last half eon. Did you know that bleeding horseshoe crabs is a thing? That 500,000 a year are captured and placed on racks strapped in by black bungees as their milky blue blood is drained from them, that this is no abstraction like love or antiquity, that these creatures lived before plants began on land, before Gondwana met Pangaea, before the five great extinctions, which were not abstractions. And now we reap them from the sea for a liquid more dear than mercury, or Chanel number 5, which I read was the only thing Marilyn Monroe wore to bed, which led JFK to abandon Camelot, and that Jesus had 5 scars and Moses 5 books, and Coco Chanel thought women shouldn't smell like flowers, they should smell like women, which is an abstraction, or like laundry, which is not, and that without horseshoe crab blood, you would likely be dead of E. coli or of some contaminated drug. But you're not, and the crabs are, or at least they will be, this arthropod having survived the Ordovician, but likely not Homo medicandus, which is just fine with me, so long as they survive me, which is not an abstraction, don't you agree?
Awesome. Thanks so much. That was Richard Westheimer really implicating you in the crime of the last half eon. Love the music in that poem, Richard. Thanks so much for sharing it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a great night.
Have a cool evening. Bye.
Bye. Let's see. Well, I really should go. Let me see. I want to make sure we get new people. I want to make sure I get anybody who both sent me a message and a poem. But I think we're good. Yeah. So if I can't share your poem today, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. I got to put my kids to bed. It is that time of night. We start the bedtime routine at 7:30. But thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure. I just love John Philip Johnson's work. It was great to meet him. I love all your poems for the prompt. Next week's prompt is going to be... this is next week's prompt. With your eyes closed, open any book to a random page. Make the title of your poem the first word you see. That's next week's prompt. With your eyes closed, open any book to a random page. Make the title of the poem the first word you see. So pretty open-ended prompt. Get you something to kick you in gear and then write some, which is the whole point of these, really everything we do, is that writing makes life better. And poetry makes life better in so many ways. And I'm glad that everybody can do this and share the poems that you write. So next week's guest is going to be Dorian Lux and her new and selected book, which was the finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, Only as the Day is Long. That's her new and selected book by Dorian Lux. She's always been one of my favorite poets, from back in the days of What We Carry, like in the 90s. It was one of my poets that I was introduced to poetry through is Dorian Lux. We interviewed her in Rattle number 8 or 9, and now she'll be on the Rattlecast, episode number 44, with her new book, Only as the Day is Long. So really looking forward to that. In the meantime, hope you have a great night, and I'll see you soon. Good night.